welcome to Tech Can't Save Us. I'd love to give a warm welcome to Jordan Coyne Jackson, one of the best names ever. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you on the pod. Jordan and I connected through one of Jordan's amazing products, which he's going to talk to us about, but he's the founder of Black Men's Book Club, which I'll let him tell us all about in a moment. But we're just excited to have you on Tech Can't Save Us, brought to you by Literal Humans. The focus of the podcast is tech for good. We also talk about tech for bad and just lots of stuff in tech, and you've got a lot of great ideas about it. So let's just jump in. First things first. Tell us about Black Men's Book Club, the group, the email list, the app. Just give us all the juicy details.
Yeah, thank you. So Black Men's Book Club right now is a mobile iOS app focused on giving Black men a space to basically learn and educate themselves on some of the best nonfiction books in bite-sized bits. I developed this idea for Black Men's Book Club, which is called Hack Summaries, which is simply just a short audio summary of some of the best books. You know, just trying to figure out ways to get content and get ideas to people in different functional ways. Always been an avid reader as a kid. Always love reading. People around me, not so much. You know, it's more cool now to be on Twitter. It's more cool to do other things. More cool to play sports, other things. But, you know, reading was always my solace, and I always found a lot of power in that. And it kind of helped guide me to where I am today. So for me, I was just trying to figure out a way to kind of give back to the community and find a way to help show different people a different way. So, you know, that's the app right now. I also have a newsletter for Black Men's Book Club, which you mentioned, where I've been telling different stories about different ideas, and I've been using that to actually add more people to the app as well. So just kind of building an ecosystem for reading for Black men. You know, that's the key thing for me.
Let's dig into the product a little bit. Like, what is a hacked summary for listeners who might not know what a hacked summary is?
Yeah. It's a great question. So basically, and this is a good segue, because when I kind of got into tech, I had a bunch of really good friends around me. They were Black men. They were also trying to learn about all these different spaces, trying to learn about startups, trying to learn about technology, trying to learn about, you know, marketing, product, all these things. And we'd have a bunch of books we were reading from, you know, all these top people, and we would start creating notes for them. Kind of, we would share it in the Slack group, where we would be like, okay, well, we can kind of get a good idea of what the book's about before we can read it, so we can kind of have a generalized idea and give us more context and more understanding about a wider set of topics. So I kind of took that idea, and I always kind of sat in that for a while, and I wanted to figure out a way to kind of put that into the world, you know, outside of just my small group. So a hack summary really is just a micro summary of a book, in a sense where it's like, we're just telling a kind of, it's not always about a summary book, it's more just telling the story of the purpose of the book. Like, what are the actionable things you get out of this book? Like, when you read Malcolm X's autobiography, you know, it's a lot about how his life and what he's done, but it's also about like, what can we take from the book? And you know, that type of question is kind of what we were trying to answer with Black Men's Book Club in this hack summaries. And it's usually like 2 to 3 minutes. It's not like, you know, it's like it's like as long as a Cardi B song. You know what I mean? It's if you listen to Cardi B, you can listen to a hack summary. That's what I like to say. But you know, that's me.
And you see it as like as an entree, like into the book itself, or
I definitely see it as a supplementary thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I think it's hard to replace a book, because, you know, it's books are so big and you get so much from them. That's the Achilles heel of it. It's so big that it turns people away. So what I'm really trying to do is you're trying to convince people that there's something here you should look into more. You know, that's kind of the thing. It's like, that was interesting. I kind of want to read into that a little bit more. Like, that's what I want people to be intrigued, and, you know, I want them to start thinking about different ideas. So the hack summary, I really think of it as like a supplementary. I want to use it in a broader space to you know, kind of guide people along the way to learn more about a book. Like, a hack summary is just a part of a bigger, you know, way, a bigger ecosystem for a book, I feel like, you know. So
I want to ask you about the long-term vision for Black Men's Book Club, but I want to ask it in a very specific way, which is, like, we're living in the attention economy. So we got Disney Plus and, you know, Bridgerton on, you know, Netflix and like all this stuff. How are you like building the app to capture people's attention, you know, and that, frankly, like, steal attention away from those other things, which are all razzle dazzle, into books?
Right. No, that's a great question. The long-term vision I mean, I have a crazy long-term vision. I mean, I think Blackman Book Club is kind of at the bridge between, at least in America, our education system, especially for Black Americans, is, you know, it's not up to equality, I feel like, that can give people a leg up in modern society. That's just me. Maybe other people feel the same way, but I personally feel like that. And I feel like, you know, Blackman Book Club can help bridge the gap between, you know, the future and the old. You know, like, for example, Elon was on the Clubhouse the other day, and he was saying, people asked him, what do you teach your 7-year-old son? How do you teach him? He's like, oh, YouTube and Reddit. And everyone was like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, it's going there quick. And, you know, for me, it's like, I would love to be at a place one day where I have a physical location where we actually can actually meet in this club. It actually is the Black Men's Book Club, the location, and we can actually expouse out the ideas. It can be kind of an incubator of thought, you know, kind of like a renaissance of ideas, a space for that, for black men, and just actually Black people in general. You know, for me, like, I want people like Jay Prince to have a library on there. I want like Master P to have a library on there. I want Jay-Z to have a library on there, and they can share their books to people that follow them and see, oh, that's what Jay-Z's reading. You know, that's one of the ways, like, and, you know, it's hard to beat Netflix with a book, right? Like, it's hard to beat that. So it's like, you have to figure out ways to, like you said, steal that time back and give people these habits that can create a more equitable future for them. You know, because hack summaries, the whole idea is like, you know, if I can get someone to read a hack summary a day, I feel like they'd be unstoppable. Getting them to do that for 3 minutes a day, like that, but that's not hard. That's not easy though. You know, trying to, you know, experiment as well along the way, like the library is kind of one thing, like sharing in general, like sharing hack summaries, all things is very, very important. You know, you got to plug into the social platforms, you got to plug into people's iMessage, Instagram, everything. But, you know, just really trying to build a habit, man, and just really trying to get experimenting ways to see, you know, what's the best way to get people to come back for more.
What was the game-changing book in your life? Like, how did reading, yeah, shake things up for you?
Man, that's a great one. I have two, actually. One for life and one for tech. And they came at different times. I was like 16 or 17, and, you know, I was not having a good time in high school. It was kind of the loner, kind of, you know, to myself kind of kid. Like, it was lunch, I would go to like the library, you know.
I was in the student council room. That was me. I was like popular but lonely.
yeah. So I would always try to go to the library, sneak around the hall monitors, and go to the library in the school. And one day I picked up Maya Angelou's her collection of poems, just like her top collection of poems. And I had read Maya Angelou before, and I had read some of her most famous books, obviously, as a kid. But I was just reading her poems, and just, she's such a, you know, like, people kind of lock her into this kind of like poet and just like this certain type of writing. But she has a lot of life lessons, like super important morality keys, things like that, that kind of hit me when I was young. I was like, you know, it made a big impression on me, and I've always been a huge fan of her work ever since.
Why does that happen to Black creators? Like why does, like Maya Angelou becomes the poet, or like Martin Luther King becomes like the civil right, when like they were such, you know,
I don't know. I think it's such a, yeah, it's a monolith. They create a monolith for these iconic people, you know, and there's such a treasured chest of knowledge in these kind of these legends. So, you know, I totally agree. I don't know why that happens. The other book I read, and this was such a funny thing, was after I dropped out of college, first semester.
That's very tech of you. That's very hip tech of you. That's the cool thing in tech.
It wasn't cool at the time in my mom's house, I'll tell you that.
Times were tense. It was tense.
Yeah, times were tense. Oh yeah. So at that time though, like I dropped out. I didn't have any prospects. I was working at a movie theater. Not much going on. You know, just trying to get by, trying to figure out how to get the hell out of my mom's crib. And for the Christmas, you know, she bought me socks. I think it's like, she bought me socks and then she bought me one book.
Put these socks on, get the hell out.
and read this book. And this book was Steve Jobs' autobiography. And I had liked technology. I liked Apple. I liked iPhone. But I wasn't, you told me I would be coding, I would laugh in your face. I'm like, I'm never going to code. What are you talking about? So I was completely distant from actually like being a part of tech. But I read his book, and once again, like, you know, this is such a common thing. You read a book, you really understand the person a little bit more than just a headline or just like Steve Jobs was an asshole. It's like, there's a little bit more to this complicated story. And you know, reading about his life and what he did and why he did it, and about moving the, and I think one very, very famous quote at the end of the book was about just how, you know, we just pick up where other people left off. Like, we're only as good as what's happened in the past, but we pass the baton to next generation. And that hit me, and I'm like, you know, either I can kind of sulk about things going on, you know, be upset, or I can actually try to make a change and actually, like, bridge the gap. And that really kind of inspired me to, you know, jump into tech a little more. But
his story has always really inspired me. I mean, you know, granted, like, whatever people say about how his attitude and stuff like that, like, you know, certain things, yeah, not great, whatever. People are complex, whatever. But he's adopted, I'm adopted. And I think the way that, like, I've heard people write about his experience, like, the only reason we have iPhones is because the Jobs is adopted a little boy with a Syrian dad and a mom who couldn't, you know, wasn't able to take care of him.
Right.
And they lived in Silicon Valley and he got exposed to all that stuff. And, like, that's a crazy story. Right. And there's a really good line in one of the movies about him where he talks about, like, processing this idea that, like, when you're adopted, you feel like you're rejected rather than selected. And you spend a lot of your life trying to, like, exercise control. You know, and that's why he was such a control freak. And that's why we came up with these beautiful products, because he was an absolute control freak, you know, yes, partly stemming from his adoption experience. And but, like, that helped me as a fellow adoptee, like, just process that, you know what I mean? So
Right. And those stories are from all over, you know, and that's the power of books. You know, that's what, like, draws me to them, is because you get to hear these different perspectives and you can draw on, like, oh, that resonates with me because of this. And that kicks up my gear, you know, that revs my engine, you know. So it's a powerful thing, man. So those two books, I would say, had a big impact on me, for sure. Yeah, those two.
What is your personal journey into, you know, tech for good work been? And yeah, just like what's your journey been? And just, yeah, add on to what you said earlier about the books and such.
Oh, yeah, sure. So my journey in tech, it started, I always say this, I'm a very lucky person because my journey in tech was extremely unorthodox. Like I said earlier, I did drop out of college my freshman year at Wayne State University in Detroit. And at the time, it was just like, I just knew, like, this school stuff is just, there's something about this is just not, I don't, you know, I was going for a degree in philosophy, you know, and that was based off of just, like, my love of literature. I wanted to be, like, a lawyer, you know. I was thinking, like, get an undergrad in philosophy, then I go to, you know, I'm thinking all types of crazy stuff. Don't know nothing about any of these things. I woke up to the idea after I read the Steve Jobs book that, like, tech was something that I could be a part of, and there was a lane for me to actually contribute to the world. But, you know, the tech for good part, which is important, like, my mom is and was and still is, like, she's a therapist, social worker. She's been a social good person her whole life. She's, you know, she's the person if I could be as good as her, I feel like I'd be good. You know, I'm always trying to be as good as she is, but she's, like, you know, worked in DPS for years and stuff like that. And she would always push these ideas to me that, you know, you can make a difference, you know, and that you can actually contribute good to the world if you decide to. People can contribute badly. Yes, we probably will talk about the tech for bad that happens, but, you know, you can make a difference. So going on to after I dropped out, I was lucky enough to run into, I had a good friend I roomed with at Wayne State, Rodney Danis. And he was working, well, he was with a buddy of his, DeAndre Ely. They were working on a kind of incubator for startups called PureCode. And they came with us themselves. They were working on different ideas. They were trying to build different things. And one night they invited me over to a buddy of our house, and they were just like, hey, do you want to just join us working on PureCode? And I was like, this is like a 50-50 flip. Like I could say yes or no. In the moment, it didn't matter. I'm working in a movie theater tomorrow, no matter what. So it's like, screw it. Let's do it. Yes.
Wow. And you had no coding experience?
No coding, no marketing, no. My role really was, I was like the underling CEO, I was a COO. That was my title. So I was basically just, you know, whatever we need to get done, and we're going to get it done. So we need marketing, work on marketing. We need this, we need to work on that. So I was just, I took that role because I had the mindset, like, yeah, I don't know any of this. My friend of mine who's actually technical, another friend who was crazy good at product, you know, all these things. Like, we're a bunch of 18-year-old, you know, black guys, 19-year-old black guys, and we're putting this together. So from that, I stayed in that position, and we started to build a company called Run, which was an on-demand delivery company. And this was about 2013. So this was before even DoorDash was out. This was like Postmates was about to launch. Uber Eats didn't exist. And we were working on that idea for about a year and a half or so, maybe 2 years. And we applied to YC a bunch of times. And, you know, it was, I like to call my experience at Run as a MBA in startups. You know, I got kicked out of, I was out of college, but I still got my MBA, you know, because I'm learning about term sheets, learning about, you know, investing vehicles, LLCs and coding and just all these different things that I were just like, whoa, you know, so the world kind of just, this thing opened up. And then from there, I kind of, you know, snowballed from there. But
that's the thing about, I mean, I'm going to get like a lot of hate mail from MBA or whatever, but like, from my understanding of the history of MBAs is like, it started as a place where companies would send their underperforming people to go get an MBA. Cause like, think about it. If you were a good business person, why would you go back to school? You just do the business stuff, like you said. Like, but like, I think it's now evolved to like, you know, it's a place where you go to expand your network and to, you know, refine your skills and things like that. But I love how you framed it of like, my MBA was like on the ground doing the work, building a company, and I learned by experience. So yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. Definitely. And people, you know, nowadays ask me all the time, like, you know, for coding or building a company, like how should I get started? What should I do? How do I get into stuff? Just to start. It's like, you should build whatever you want to build, you know? And it's like, that's something people usually don't want to hear. It's like, when I'm a writer, people, I used to ask people, like, what do I do to get started writing? They're like, you should probably just start writing. You know, that's the hard truth. Is like, you get started and you know, there's a quote a friend of mine said, it's like, you know, you only lose when you stop, you know, you only lose when you stop. So it's very, very powerful lesson.
You know, you went through the Udacity program, and I think, you know, the rescaling and the upskilling and platforms like Udacity, they're part of a larger movement where people are like, all right, the new economy is changing, or it's gone, or it's here rather, and the old economy is gone. Where do you see programs like that fitting into the tech for good landscape? And what do you think the future is for that stuff?
I kind of have a mixed take on them, because I definitely have benefited dramatically from programs like Udacity. I took the program before I got into as a software engineer officially as a job, and they definitely helped me learn a lot about coding. But the hard thing about what they're doing is the universities have such a stranglehold on culture, and it's one of these things where when you're a first mover, sometimes it's a disadvantage. And I do feel as though the universities, which this is a stretch, if they're smart enough, they could implement these type of programs, and they could really build a new institution for colleges that could be incredibly good. You know, this the good fight people kind of put up for college usually are people that are, you know, that have gone through the system and, you know, didn't get what they probably deserved when they paid $100,000 for it. You know what I mean? Like, Udacity for me, when I did it, it cost, I think it was like $2,000 total, man. I mean, and I learned how to code. You know, that recurs like crazy. You know, the amount you can make of just knowing how to code. Not that you can just, it frees you up. So it, you know, it's hard, because like when I was working at the library, for instance, before I got into tech, there was many a times where people will walk in, older gentlemen. I mean, I was working in a predominantly white library, and there was older gentlemen out walking in, white men, 50-60-year-old, walk up to me with no hesitation, like, I don't know how to make a resume. I don't even have an email address. I just got laid off from Ford. I don't know what to do. And I'm just like, let's get you out of computer and we can try to, you know, cause it's, you know, that's like a, oh my God, this life has just been hit with a rock, because the society has changed. Things have grown, and, you know, people get kind of stuck in complacency, or, you know, upset about, you know, how the world kind of screwed them.
To me, that's like a failure of, this is one of the reasons I don't live in the US anymore, is like it's just a failure of policy, right? Like why are you, okay, as a 20 something, maybe a librarian, yeah, you know, like you're the front, yeah, line on like the war on poverty. You know, like how did that happen, right? Like you're 20 something, you know, like you don't know what you're doing with your life, and then like 60-year-old men are showing up asking you, how do I like reboot my career?
Yeah, 50-year-old white man who has all these things.
Yeah, but that's our system in the US. You know, like that is literally like, cause no system is also a system, right? How have we not anticipated that these factories are closing and these people are going to be looking for jobs? They need to be retrained. We just did nothing for them. And they're rolling into the library, you know, and no offense to you, but like, you're not a job trainer, you know what I mean? But you're lovely. You're amazing. But like, that's just wild to me that we haven't put the resources in place, whether it's a community college, a program like Udacity, the library, wherever, to like deal with that. You know, it's like, what are we doing for worker? I don't know. It's just, yeah. Well, let's pivot and we'll get into like kind of our lightning round, our tech for good, tech for bad sort of series of questions we ask everyone. It'll be a bit of a hard pivot at first, but we'll ease into the rest of it. First things first, like what kind of tech stack do you use at work? And I guess as an addendum to that, what's been like a game changing tech product in your life, in your career?
I would say probably the most powerful tool as a front-end engineer who builds like iOS apps has to be Firebase. And this is a tool that Google created to help engineers kind of handle databases, authentication, is able to help them with A/B testing, analytics. It's kind of an all-in-one package. And it really kickstarts any project that I want to work on pushing the front end. So Firebase is a huge, huge tool that I think a lot of people, if they knew about and they knew how to code, you can whip anything with Firebase and some coding. Another tool, especially for Black Men Book Club, has been a service called Sheedy.co. And that's a tool that lets you basically create a API for a Google Sheet. So you can have a Google Sheet with some data in it, and you can basically create a URL that basically returns some JSON that has all the data formatted just as a spreadsheet. So I kind of use that to manage like authors coming in. I also do that for books I want to add, like hack summaries. So I kind of can add them on the fly and don't have to like manually update them in different ways. So that was a big, big win because it helped me like I can add a bunch of books very quickly if I want to.
So you just go into the Google Sheet and then it pushes it over, yep. Basically. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. So I can update it. So it's super seamless, super simple. So it was a big, big win. So those two. Yeah, if I didn't have those two, I'd be a sad engineer.
Yeah. No, that's big. I mean, I could see in like, because what you're doing is so in depth, you know, like if you're like reading the book and then posting a summary, or even at your job, like if you're like, you know, changing the front end of an app that like millions of people are using, you know what I mean? Like that's massive.
100%. Yeah, 100%. So it gives you a lot of more dynamic control of the content. And that's a big, big win, because if you don't like something, you can just hit delete. If you want to change something, you can just type it in and change it. There's no, you know, obviously, of course, if you had like an interface for your own website, that's good too. But for a scaling small type of thing, like it's very quick and easy to get up and running. So super powerful.
Potentially provocative question. We're gonna push through a bunch more of these questions around out here in the last 15 minutes. But I don't want to get you in trouble with your employer, but would you, because we actually had an interesting conversation with our last guest about like fintech and its role in like tech for good, and like what is tech for good? That's kind of an evolving question on the podcast. Would you consider like the products that you work on, so like mortgage products, you know, Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans, all that stuff, would you consider it tech for good? If so, why? If not, why not?
Well, I would say it is tech for good because the barrier already is so high to get a home, understand how to purchase a home. The whole process is just something I didn't know coming up with Quicken Loans. Like, I had no idea how to do any of those things. And working on building a mobile first version of those products made me realize like, oh, wow, there's so many people that don't know either. And they're stuck on phones with people talking to them all day about, you know, how to do these things, which is like a big, you know, not everyone has the understanding capability to just get all of that in that way. So for me, I definitely think it is. Now, if we want to talk about if mortgages themselves are good for people, I mean, maybe that's a Maybe that's a whole other conversation. I don't know about that either, but it's like, I think that's up to debate as well. But I would say work on Is Tech for Good. Obviously, it's a for-profit business, so it's not like, you know, money's being made, obviously. But, you know, there's many things that Quicken has been working on doing in the community as well, which I definitely just have to give a shout out to. In Detroit, you know, known for many years, them, you know, help clearing out a lot of debris, a lot of things going on, helping a lot of small businesses around Detroit, obviously, just being in the city, big win for the city. So I would say it's for good. I would.
Yeah. Next question. What is one problem that tech can't solve for us?
There are many problems tech can't solve for us. You know, my first thought is like, first thing I want to say is like empathy, you know, in the sense of like, tech can solve a lot of that. And I definitely believe it can, but as long as the interface is like, as long as the distance is here, I feel like it's hard for people to really, you know, there's something about people just watching, just the stuff you can just watch the internet and just casually turn off is like, it's like, well, you know, this is weird. This is a weird thing we just watch and no one say, you just turn it off and keep going and nothing happened. Like, there's something about that that screams to me, like, we're kind of, and the internet is disconnecting people a little bit more, you know, than I think we initially wanted. So there's something about the connection between people that I think is like, it's the internet is hard to replicate. And I mean, obviously with everything in America going on, everything we're going on, we have a lot of misinformation right now. There's not a lot of trust between people. And I don't know today, there's so many ways people are building trust online, right? But there's also so many like barriers to it. So I don't know. It's a hard question, man. You threw a good one at me. It's a good one.
Well, we'll think about it some more. I mean, from my understanding of the neuroscience research is that like if you sit down and meditate and visualize like a thing happening, this is like manifesting, people are always talking about, that your brain, in terms of its activity, cannot distinguish you like sort of visualizing it from the thing actually happening. So that the ultimate effect on your brain and your sort of, you know, brain chemistry is that they're relatively the same. That's why I'm like bullish on VR AR in terms of like I would build a VR AR product that's like, cool, we need to like re-educate all the men in America about sexism and misogyny, and like every guy has to like, in, you know, just like experience what women experience, and like, could that change things? Maybe, I don't know, but like,
yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I mean, God, I'm hoping Dogecoin solves the currency problem. So I'm sorry, I'm not even gonna.
All right, we'll keep it moving. Tech for bad. What's the evilest application of tech that you've seen?
Oh man, maybe platforms like Tinder. Maybe platforms like Facebook, maybe, I'm going to say it, maybe, yeah, those two are pretty bad. Those two are really bad. I feel like they damage relationships, especially, I mean, between men and women dramatically, I think, on Tinder and all those things. I think the culture of swiping between people is creepy.
I think whole books and PhD psychology theses are going to be written about what the apps, the dating apps in particular, have done to our generations, you know, like I would say millennials and Gen Z. Like, I think it's just like, it's off the wall, man. Like, it's really, we're in the middle of it still. And like,
we're in the middle of it. We're addicted to it. I got it. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying Tinder, but I'm really just all dating apps, really. Especially the apps. Like when you do that swiping, it's like, oh, this is you can swipe through 100 people, all of a sudden you're just like,
that's a human, or like another human sent a message specifically to you and you've just like canceled them. You know what I mean? Like you've deleted that. Like, it's just like, it's wild when you think about it.
Yeah. So that's one of those we talked about earlier, like using the psychological tools of like, you know, TV and all these very traditional ways people have been kind of manipulating people through, you know, TV and different things in the past have been brought to these platforms, and they're very sticky. And, you know, there's many questions about the legality of how much they're doing. So I'm not gonna pretend like I've never used Tinder, But that's probably I have the perspective because I've used it. I'm like, man, this is.
I mean, I'll be on it so. Later. Let's be honest. But
you're real. That's real. That's
but
real.
I mean, so first of all, the running joke about that question on the podcast is that Facebook is always the right answer. It's the only right answer, and you nailed it. So yeah, Facebook is the evilest. Yeah,
comes to the mind pretty quickly. Unfortunately,
it's like first thing. You see that little blue and white? Yeah. So the antithesis of that, if you could dream up a new tech product, what would it be and what problem would it solve and for whom? Mm. Black Men's Book Club aside, obviously.
Yeah, okay. The Black Men's Book side. I have crazy ideas, man. Part of me would love to work in a renewable energy type of product and, you know, work in a space where involving space and involving you know, things like asteroid mining or different ways of resource allocation, you know, with robots and AI and things like that, I think is extremely interesting to me. But also to bring it back down to Earth, I would say another interesting thing is things with LiDAR technology. Using LiDAR to
what's LiDAR?
So LiDAR was what originally, if you've ever seen like on the streets, those like those cars, like self-driving cars that big thing on top where it kind of spins around. So that's a LiDAR AI system that's scanning around to, you know, kind of read environment. Elon Musk kind of has killed that with his own computer vision with his car, which have no weird clunky thing on top. And LiDAR basically kind of is, they're still using it for cars, but it's not the use case that it goes way beyond cars. And one of the use cases, which I found interesting, was they were using LiDAR in drones over the Amazon rainforest, and they were trying to figure out like basically the different patterns of life that have been around there. Cause there's studies that say LiDAR, they basically LiDAR can kind of go through a lot of different elements in the ground and kind of really see beneath a lot of the forestry and kind of get to the root of things, which is, you know, very powerful tool. And I feel like there's a lot of different ways it can be used. And, you know, traditionally when people look into different sites, dig sites, for example, to look into like say a dinosaur fossil, something, they have to dig through the ground, you know, and just kind of disturb the fossils just to get them out, you know. So there's a lot of interesting use cases for that technology. So I guess my answer kind of dives basically on the technology and really renewable and also like scientific exploration. So those are the big ideas that kind of ring true in my head. Yeah,
learn about something new. LiDAR. I'm gonna go look it up after the pod.
Seriously.
Last two questions. So what's your big prediction for like the tech for good space in 2021 and beyond?
A big prediction. Yeah, I would say in 2021 and beyond, I feel like, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, roaring 20s, you know, in the tech world and stuff like that. And, you know, that excites me, but I feel like the tech for good space is going to grow a lot because a lot of people that have been left behind in a lot of ways are about to get online, and they're going to start taking advantage of these new platforms where they can actually, like, instead of being the actual the revenue source, like on Facebook and, you know, Robinhood and things like that, where you are the product, you know, instead of being like that, you actually are contributing to a large community where you're actually earning from your content, and you're actually, you know, finding other people that are also interested, like completely like-minded in what you're talking about, you know. So I think community for social good causes is going to explode in 2021, you know, as like we're kind of in this transition period between COVID still going on, but there's like kind of a light in the tunnel a little bit. So, you know, there's going to be more and more like ideas for in-person things where different groups of people come together based on these ideas, whether it be from Zoom, whether it be from Clubhouse, whether it be from the stuff we're working on. Like, I feel like there's a lot of potential for, I always say this, like people have so much potential. It's so much tied up that can be just let out that I feel like, I mean, especially in America, I really do feel like we've been kind of, you know, locked in the cycle of just, you know, whatever's popular, whatever's big, whatever's thing, we're just going to click onto that. Creativity has been lower, but I feel like this decade, it's gonna really enable the people that want to. Some people might not want to, but I feel like it's really going to enable those people.
Last question, and perfect segue from your last answer. Like, and we always talk about this in tech for good, you know, a big part of Tech for Good is balancing a career and a life that has profit and purpose. So you make enough to keep the bills, pay the bills, you make enough to, you know, help people.
Right.
So like, what's worked well for you? Not advice, but like, what's worked well for Jordan in terms of balancing those two things in your Tech for Good career?
It's a great question, man. I think the first thing and most important thing in my head was you got to talk to your people. You got to talk to the people that are that love what you're doing. You know, like, as long as you're open and honest with the people that actually want to do what you're talking about, they're going to let you know. You know, they're going to be straightforward because they're the ones that are putting their money in your pocket. So I would start there in my mindset, like, you know, be amongst the people, try to drop the ego, try to just think about how it feels the other side of that paywall, you know, and if you're honest with yourself, and you know, you feel comfortable with yourself and really in tune with yourself, I feel like it gives you a really confident runway to make those decisions. So, you know, I'll start with that, man.
No, that's great. Yeah. And that's like, you keyed into like, that's why we named our company what we did. Like, always bring people back to that core of like, look, we're just literal humans. Like, we're just out here trying to live. Like, you know, all this other stuff that we do, it's great. Marketing, right. Tech, whatever. But
yeah, it's a great name. It's a great name.
Dang, well, we try. We were marketers after all. So hopefully we can name things. But cool, Matt. Well, listen, we're so grateful for your time, Jordan. Really appreciate you having you on the Tech Can't Save Us podcast here by Literal Humans. Amazing conversation. Super proud of the work you're doing with Black Men's Book Club. I'm reading it. I'm looking at the hack summaries all the time. And we encourage other people to do it as well. So is there a site that folks can go to for Black Men Book Club?
Oh, yeah. BlackMenBookClub.com. You can go right there. You can search BMBC on the App Store. And you'll be able to see the app in the App Store as well. But yeah, BlackMenBookClub.com. We got a link to the app right there. You know, anyone got any feedback, any questions, you know, find me on Twitter, Jordan WC Jackson, before they take me out, maybe. And I appreciate so much having me on, man. This is great.
You bet. We really enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, we'll stay in touch. Thanks so much, Jordan. Have a good one.
Awesome, man. Thank you.